Welcome, and thank you all for holding. I would like to remind all parties that your lines are on a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer segment of today's conference. Also, this call is being recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time. I will now turn the call over to Tom Skinner for opening remarks.
Thank you, Laurel, and thank you all for joining us today for this telebriefing as we discuss the first case of Middle East Respiratory Syndrome coronavirus infection in the United States. Today we have with us Dr. Anne Schuchat, who is the director of the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases here at CDC. She'll provide some opening remarks, and then when we get to your questions, she's going to be joined by Ms. Pamela Pontones, who is the state epidemiologist for the Indiana State Department of Health. So now I would like to turn the call over to Dr. Schuchat.
Thank you, Tom, and thanks, everyone, for joining us this afternoon. I want to provide you with some information on a rapidly evolving situation. The first confirmed imported case of Middle East Respiratory Syndrome coronavirus, known as MERS-CoV, has been reported in the United States. The patient, a healthcare provider, recently traveled from Saudi Arabia, where outbreaks of MERS are occurring. The patient is currently in a hospital in Indiana. The patient is isolated, in stable condition, and being well cared for. The Indiana Public Health Laboratory tested specimens from this person using the MERS-CoV testing kits developed by CDC. And today, CDC confirmed the test results in our laboratory. CDC is working closely with the Indiana State Health Department and hospital to rapidly respond to and investigate this situation to help prevent the spread of the virus. MERS-CoV is a virus that is relatively new to humans and was first reported in Saudi Arabia in 2012. Most people who have been confirmed to have MERS-CoV infection develop severe acute respiratory illness with fever, cough, and shortness of breath. As of today, including this importation into the United States, 262 people in 12 countries have been confirmed to have MERS-CoV infection and reported to the World Health Organization. 93 of these people have died. More than 100 other patients have been confirmed with MERS-CoV and reported by their ministries of health and not yet included in the World Health Organization's tallies. Based on the information we have so far, people with pre-existing health conditions or weakened immune systems may be more likely to become infected with or have a severe case of MERS-CoV. So far, all MERS cases have been linked to 6 countries in or near the Arabian Peninsula. Since March 2014, there has been an increase in the number of cases reported from Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. The reason for this increase in cases is not yet known, and public health investigations are ongoing. There's no available vaccine or specific treatment recommended for MERS-CoV. We do not know where the virus came from or exactly how it spreads, although there are some theories of its origin related to camels, for instance. In some countries, the virus has spread from infected people to others through close contact. However, there is currently no evidence of sustained spread of MERS coronavirus in community settings. The virus has spread in hospitals, though. The largest reported outbreak to date occurred April through May last year in 2013. In eastern Saudi Arabia, and that reported outbreak involved 23 confirmed cases in 4 healthcare facilities. CDC has been working with partners to better understand the risks of this virus, including the source, how it spreads, and how infections might be prevented. In this interconnected world we live in, we expected MERS-CoV to make its way to the United States, and we have been preparing for this. We enhanced surveillance and laboratory testing capacity in states in order to detect cases. We developed guidance and tools for health departments to conduct public health investigations. We provided recommendations for healthcare infection control and other measures to prevent disease spread. We provided guidance for flight crews, EMS units at airports, and customs and border protection officers about reporting ill travelers to CDC, and we disseminated up-to-date information to the public, international travelers, and our public health partners. Let me share some more information with you about the first MERS patient in the United States and what we are doing now in collaboration with the hospital and state public health officials to respond. On April 24th, the patient traveled by plane from Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, to London, England, and then from London to Chicago, Illinois. The patient then took a bus from Chicago to Indiana. On the 27th of April, the patient began to experience respiratory symptoms, including shortness of breath, coughing, and fever. The patient went to an emergency department in an Indiana hospital on April 28th and was admitted on that same day. The patient is being well cared for and is isolated and is currently in stable condition. Because of the patient's symptoms and travel history, Indiana public health officials tested the patient for MERS-CoV. The Indiana State Public Health Lab and CDC have both confirmed MERS-CoV infection in the patient. CDC confirmed this result this afternoon. CDC and the State Health Department do not yet know how the patient became infected, how many people have had close contact with the patient, and whether they have become ill. We do know that many healthcare providers and workers in the hospital had varying levels of contact with the patient. Indiana Hospital is using full precautions, standard, contact, and airborne, to avoid exposure within the hospital and among healthcare personnel and other people interacting with the patient, as is recommended by the CDC. As part of the prevention and control measures, officials are reaching out to close contacts to provide guidance about monitoring their health. The first U.S. importation of MERS-CoV infection represents a very low risk to the broader general public. Again, in some countries, there has been limited spread of the virus from person to person through close contact, such as caring for or living with an infected person. However, the virus has not shown the ability to spread easily from person to person in community settings. It is very concerning that the virus has spread in hospitals, and we should not be surprised if additional cases are identified among the healthcare providers who had close contact with this patient before the patient was isolated and special precautions were implemented. People will understandably be concerned by this news and want to know what they should do. CDC advises that people help protect themselves from respiratory illness by washing your hands often, avoiding close contact with people who are sick, avoiding touching your eyes, nose, and mouth with unwashed hands, and disinfecting frequently touched surfaces. As I said already, we don't know exactly how this virus spreads, but we encourage people to take these common sense steps. At this time, CDC does not recommend that anyone change their travel plans. People who develop a fever and cough or shortness of breath within 14 days after traveling from countries in or near the Arabian Peninsula should see a healthcare professional and mention their recent travel. While sick, they should stay home from work or school to reduce spreading illness to others. Others who should monitor their symptoms include those who have close contact with someone who has a fever and cough or shortness of breath after the other person had recently traveled to a country in or near the Arabian Peninsula. So those are the two groups that need to take special attention about their symptoms. Healthcare providers should be alert to patients who develop severe acute lower respiratory illness within 14 days after traveling from countries in or near the Arabian Peninsula, excluding those who only transited at airports in the region. They should contact their state or local health department and collect appropriate specimens. We have great guidance for clinicians on our website. The introduction of MERS-CoV is another reminder that diseases are just a plane ride away. While centered in the Arabian Peninsula, MERS is now in our heartland. Strong public health systems to rapidly detect and respond to health threats are critical to finding and preventing unnecessary spread of disease. This situation is very fluid. We expect to learn much more in the coming days Our guidance and recommendations may change as the situation evolves. We will share updated information through additional press conferences and through the CDC and the Indiana Department of Health websites, and those will be posted on CDC's website after this call. Now I'd like to turn things back over to Tom and answer the questions that you may have.
Hey, Laurel, I think we're ready for questions, please.
Certainly. At this time, to ask a question on the phone lines, please depress star 1 and record your name when prompted. Star 1, please. Our first question today comes from Miriam Falco. Your line is open, and please state your affiliation.
Hi, it's Miriam Falco from CNN Medical News. You said that the first of all, thanks for taking the questions. You said the patient was in stable condition. What does that really mean? How virulent, how infectious was this patient on the plane, on the bus, and in the hospital?
Let me begin with the answer. The patient is requiring oxygen support at this time, and the patient is generally stable. The patient isn't requiring a ventilator for respiratory support. The patient's getting excellent care in Indiana. In terms of the airplane, it's very important to say that at this time in this investigation, we are approaching this with an abundance of caution. And so assuring that we notify contacts through the conveyances that the patient was on and those close contacts in the healthcare facility or family is really being taken out of an abundance of caution. We have no information at this time about spread in any of those settings, but we want to make sure to alert people about the potential risk. As a reminder, this virus has been exported from the Arabian Peninsula to other countries. In those settings, there was limited, if any, spread, but the spread that happened did include others in the healthcare setting or in the family. So in terms of the airplane and so forth, we're just out of an abundance of caution, want to assure that we're following up those contacts. Next question, please.
Our next question comes from Mike Stobe. Your line is open, and please state your affiliation.
Hi, it's Mike from the Associated Press. Thanks for taking my question. You said that the patient is a healthcare provider. Could you be more specific? Is it a physician? And could you say the gender and the age? And did that person have a pre-existing condition? You mentioned pre-existing condition.
Sure, Mike. Thanks for that question. As you can imagine, protecting the information of an individual in an investigation like this is very important. What I can tell you is that the patient is a healthcare provider who was providing healthcare while in Saudi Arabia. The additional details we're really trying to protect the individual and that person's family. Next question, please.
Our next question comes from Jane Duranowski. Your line is open, and please state your affiliation.
Hi, this is Jane from NBC. I'm wondering if you are releasing the name of the airline or bus line this person was on to warn other passengers.
Thank you for that question. Sometimes we do need to put a very broad alert out. We are working closely with the Department of Homeland Security and the airline industry so that we can more direct the focus in a more targeted way to the people who actually were on the airline. So we don't anticipate needing to do a broad alert about airlines at this point, but have had very good collaboration with the industry right now. We prefer that because it really can focus the greatest attention on the people who do need to be contacted. But as you know, sometimes we do need to go a little bit wider. So we are not releasing that information at this time. Next question, and I want to clarify, I've been told that if people have a follow-up question, they're allowed to. So I guess if you have a follow-up, you're probably already disconnected. But
I do, actually. What is the incubation period before symptoms start to show?
We think about 5 days between infection and when you start to be symptomatic. We have that 14-day period after travel because there are some people who, you know, there are just a few people that have that longer tail. So, again, out of an abundance of caution, we've got that 14-day period in with the travel history. But most of the patients that have clear-cut exposure to someone else have become ill symptomatically within 5 days. Thank you for that question. Next question.
One moment, please. Once again, if parties would still please star one to ask a question. Our next question comes from Michael Caldwell.
Hi, this is Michael Caldwell, ABC News. I'm wondering if there's any plans to do background serials surveillance of the workers in the hospital. The case fatality rate here seems very high, but I recall when West Nile virus started, we thought the case fatality rate was high, and we eventually learned that it was really not as bad as we thought. So I'm just wondering if where we are with that.
Yeah, thank you. Some of the reports coming out of the investigations in the region suggest that there are some asymptomatic patients. Some people have been followed up as contacts in the Middle East and are found to be without symptoms but to have a positive PCR test. What I would say is that there's a very active investigation in the facility and in the working closely with the Indiana Health Department, and the details are still being worked out. When there is a new infection like this, about which little is known, it can be very important to learn as much as possible quickly so that we can improve our guidance and our protocols. And so I think that this particular situation is one where we really hope to be able to refine the guidance that we give based on additional information gained in the first several days. And that's a chance for me to remind people that today we may have certain guidance, and in the future it may change as we learn more and we realize that we can be a little bit more relaxed or even need to be a little bit more strict. But at this point, we do know that there have been people identified in other countries who have the virus identified through the polymerase chain reaction test who did not actually have any symptoms. That case fatality rate of about a third or 30% or so is based on the symptomatic patients. So there is a lot more to learn about this virus that's relatively new. Did you have a follow-up question?
No, Dr. Sugar, but it does give me some sense that the case fatality rate may be a lot less than we're noting right now.
Yeah, I think that is possible, but I do want to say that for respiratory viruses that have symptoms, this is a very severe clinical presentation. To have about a third of people with any symptoms dying from the infection. So, of course, we look over time. You know, that's the case with the H7N9 situation. We've been tracking that new influenza virus. And the case fatality ratio may change. But we have been looking at this particular virus since 2012. And there's as I think I mentioned, we're seeing it, the clinical illness in people who are older, people who have underlying medical conditions, and we're seeing about a third of them die from the virus. So it's a very serious virus based on everything we know now. We hope to learn much more, but we want to take this very seriously and not assume that it's a mild issue. But again, things can change. That's what we know now based on about 2 years' worth of people investigating this in several countries. Next question. Laurel?
Our next question comes from Rob Stein. Your line is open, and please state your affiliation.
It's Rob Stein from National Public Radio. Thanks for taking my call. I was wondering if you could tell us any more about where in Indiana this patient is, and anything more about has anybody else on the plane or the bus or anybody else that this person has come in contact with shown any symptoms yet?
Let me begin by saying we are trying to allow the investigation to go forward and the facility to respond locally. We aren't aware now of anyone else with confirmed illness. We have a very active investigation on, and so I think I would say it's way too early for us to breathe a sigh of relief that no one else is ill, and we'll be actively investigating in the groups that I mentioned. I think that Dr. Pantonis may want to say more, but in general, we'd really like to keep this at the high level rather than name a facility. Next question.
I'm sorry. Can I follow this follow-up?
Oh, yeah, sure. I'm sorry.
Okay. So I'm saying, are you saying that you're not saying anything about where in Illinois or, I mean, Indiana this patient is? And are you saying that you, some other folks might have gotten infected? There's some indication?
No. Let me be very clear. We do not have reports of any other patients ill with the MERS coronavirus in this investigation, but it's a very active investigation and very early. We only confirmed the virus this afternoon, and we are just beginning to look at others. But this is not a telebriefing based on a cluster of illness in the United States. This is a single patient who has imported the virus and is ill here. We are trying to protect the specifics of the location, so that's why I'm not mentioning that here. And that is, pretty standard protocol for this kind of thing. But to say we will update regularly, and if there are additional cases, that is the type of reason that we would make updates. At this point, people are working very actively to try to understand whether others are ill, and they are alerting people to look for signs and symptoms, and they are also letting the clinical community know what they need to do in terms of evaluating those patients and making sure people who do develop symptoms are isolated and not able to spread further. So we don't have any confirmed illness due to the MERS coronavirus beyond this single case that I'm describing at this point. So I'm sorry if I wasn't clear about that. Next question.
One moment, please. Our next question comes from Betsy McKay. Your line is open, and please state your affiliation.
Hi, it's Betsy McKay from the Wall Street Journal. Dr. Shukat, I apologize. I'm talking from a cell phone, so if the reception is terrible, I apologize. I missed some of what you said earlier, so if I could just ask you to clarify, did you say this person who is a healthcare provider was given health care in Saudi Arabia or actually providing health care in Saudi Arabia? And is your assumption, or do you have knowledge that this patient probably got infected in a hospital or a healthcare setting in Saudi Arabia? Like that's where they got infected?
Yeah, thank you. The person was providing health care in Saudi Arabia and was not ill in Saudi Arabia. The person developed symptoms in the United States. And the assumption is the person acquired the illness in Saudi Arabia. We can't confirm that it was from the hospital or the healthcare facility, and that would be part of an active investigation. We know there's quite a bit of disease in Saudi Arabia right now that's under investigation. Next question, please.
Next question.
Can I ask one quick follow-up?
Sorry. Sure. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, we lost her connection.
Okay, all right, let's keep going. I know we have a number of others waiting to ask questions. Hopefully everyone's questions will get answered through somebody else then. So next question, Laurel.
Amy Birnbaum, CBS News, your line is open.
I'm sorry, I missed her question. I just wanted to follow up and ask, was that healthcare worker working particularly with MERS, helping out in any sense with patients who had MERS, given that, I know there's been healthcare workers who have gone over specifically to investigate that outbreak. Thank you.
We don't have that information at this time.
Thank you.
Next question.
Next question comes from Lena Sun of the Washington Post. Your line is open.
Hi. Thanks for taking the question. Can you clarify How far along are you, are folks, in contacting the people who are on the plane and the bus, and I assume that at the hospital where this patient is, it would be easier to check. But where are we in that process?
We're very early in that process. This is an active investigation. We really just got the laboratory confirmation this afternoon, and at CDC and in public health in general, we're committed to tell you what we know when we know it. So that is actively happening right now, and we will update as we learn more from the investigation.
So can I just follow up then? Does that mean that you were waiting to get the laboratory confirmation from CDC before you had the airline reach out to the people on the plane to say, okay, you know, how close are you sitting to this person in the seat? I mean, so that's or has that already been started?
Yeah, let me clarify. There are many things that have been happening simultaneously, and yet this is very active, so we didn't wait till we'd contacted every single person before we alerted the media and the general public. We have initiated many things in the past day.
Okay, and then the other follow-up question that I had was, do you know whether this person was in contact with any camels?
That's a great question, and I don't know the answer to it.
Okay.
I don't believe we have an animal exposure confirmed at this point, but thank you for the question.
Okay.
Next question, please.
Beth Galvin, your line is open, and please state your affiliation.
Hi, I'm with Fox 5 Atlanta. Dr. Shukat, thank you very much for talking to us on this short notice today. I wanted just, if you could, a little bit to talk about the MERS virus, how contagious it is, and just what level sort of alert is the CDC on now with this case here in the U.S.?
The MERS virus is of great concern because of the virulence. We've seen clinical respiratory illness that can be fatal up to a third of the time.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, it hasn't yet shown the ability to be easily spread or transmitted in the community. We're not aware yet of confirmed, sustained community transmission. In healthcare facilities with good infection control practices, we don't expect substantial transmission of this virus. And our focus, though, is in the healthcare context before it's recognized that a person may have this illness, whether there was unprotected exposure to it. So we don't have a sense right now that this is very easy to spread, but we're out of an abundance of caution really focusing in there on the healthcare context and the close context because we don't want to take any chances. Next question.
One moment. Our next question comes from Caleb Hellerman. Your line is open, and please state your affiliation.
Hi, it's Caleb Hellerman, CNN, and thanks for taking the question. One thing, you've been talking about matters of days. I'm just wondering if you could expand a little bit more on the timeline of when this person was in the kingdom and providing care and when they might have come back. I mean, was it in April or any more you could say to pin that down?
Yeah, the person traveled on April 24th from Saudi Arabia to London and then on to Chicago, Illinois. And so they were in the kingdom before the 24th. I don't have the details of how long, but I believe it was, you know, a substantial period. And so they've been in the United States since April 27th and were admitted to a hospital on the 28th of April. So it's relatively soon since this person returned to the United States, and we're closely looking at the context since they've returned here. Of course, in these situations, we're in close contact with our international partners who are doing other parts of this investigation. And, of course, many countries are investigating suspect MERS, as they have been since the virus emerged in 2012. Did you have a follow-up?
I've had a quick follow-up. Just you talked about sort of the level of how contagious or transmissible this might be. Could you be a little more specific about what kind of, you know, what constitutes the kind of precautions in a healthcare setting that you think would make you not worried about transmission? We can presume maybe those weren't being taken where she was.
No. We think that the care was very good where the patient has been. But what I'm
or where she number, got infected.
Yeah, the number of steps that can happen in a healthcare facility depend on what type of transmission you expect. There's something called contact and droplet and airborne transmission. And basically for the general public, people may need to wear masks around a patient. You may want to put them in a room where the airflow is protected and doesn't spread. There's physical barriers that you can set up. Certainly we do standard precautions for everyone in terms of hand washing and protection around bodily fluids. You know, this is a fairly medically technical set of issues, but I would just say that we have no reason to think there was inadequate care for this patient, and that at this point, with the suspicion and now confirmation, extreme measures are being taken to make sure that there's no exposure that's unprotected to this patient.
Thank you.
Next question.
Bob Rose, your line is open, and please state your affiliation.
I'm with SIDGRAPH News. Thanks for taking my question. Can you say anything about where in Saudi Arabia the person was working? I know Riyadh was mentioned. Was the patient working in Jeddah by any chance? Or
the information that we have is that the patient was working in Riyadh, and that's where they flew out of. Did you have a follow-up?
No, I guess earlier someone asked what kind of healthcare what provider the person was. I mean, I guess you can't say any more about that, correct?
That's right, just that the person was working in a healthcare facility.
All right, thank you.
Sure, next question, Laurel?
Molly McCray, your line is open, and please state your affiliation.
Hi, I'm with KPIX out of San Francisco. I'm just wondering, you say it was the first case of MERS was reported in 2012, and you've seen an increase in March of 2014. Are you guys actively tracking if this virus is mutating at all? Is the CDC involved in that? Or, you know, do you have any ideas on why you have this surge in March of 2014?
Yeah, thank you for that excellent question. There has been an increase in cases since March of this year. We actually did have more cases in the spring last year as well, and so there's some questions of whether the factors that lead to MERS may have a seasonal pattern. But, of course, another question that emerged with these last several weeks of cases is whether there's been a change in the virus to make it more easily transmissible. There is at least one isolate of the virus that was collected relatively recently that was from a patient in Saudi Arabia that was sequenced and reported, and there hadn't been, according to that report, changes in the virus that suggested any kind of mutation. So based on sequence of at least one viral isolate recently, we haven't seen changes. We will continue to monitor the situation, and as you know, with viral outbreaks, that's something that's very important to keep a lookout on. You know, with the SARS virus 10 years ago, 11 years ago, we do believe there was a change in the virus that led to more explosive transmission. So we'll continue to look at that, but we don't have data right now to confirm that that has happened.
May I have a follow-up? I just wanted,
yes,
to, wanted to find out how you're working with your you know, other entities, I guess, in the Arabian Peninsula in tracking this and taking a look at what's going on with the virus. Who are you guys working with? Is it just the CDC doing this?
No, not at all. The World Health Organization has really pulled together the different countries. We have both international partnerships that are multilateral, such as through the World Health Organization, and bilateral interactions as well. And so the CDC has done some investigations in the region. Other countries have done their own investigations or invited experts from other places. So this is, you know, in 2014, these new diseases are just a plane right away. It's really important that we cooperate internationally, and that's been absolutely vital with the MERS response. That's a lesson that we've been learning over and over as we really try to strengthen global health security worldwide. We need every country to be strong, and we need to work together effectively. And we're doing that right now. Did you have a follow-up?
We can go on to Allison Wyckoff. Your line is open, and please state your affiliation.
Hi, this is Allison Wyckoff with AAP News at the American Academy of Pediatrics. And Dr. Shukat, are there any precautions specific to children that you'd like to emphasize that could be helpful for pediatricians or parents?
We really have general precautions right now rather than ones that are specific to young children. I know that young children often have fever and respiratory symptoms, but the key here is, was there a history of travel within the past 14 days to the Arabian Peninsula or contact with someone? And then they should alert their clinician about that travel or contact. The other thing to say is that while the age range in this illness so far is very vast, you know, I think the youngest reported case was 2 years old, but the median age of the cases is around 60 years of age. So there have been some young people, some children, some others, but the cases tend to be middle-aged or, excuse me, I believe it's 51, not 61. So 51 is the median age.
Mm-hmm.
So it's middle-aged people on average, but there have been very young and much more elderly folks. So I would just say for pediatricians, all those kids with the high fever and respiratory symptoms, you know, ask a travel history. That's always a good idea. The emerging respiratory viruses really need a travel history to raise suspicion. Next question. I think we have time for just two more questions, Laurel.
Certainly. Next we have Emily Gertz. Your line is open, and please state your affiliation.
Hi, I'm Emily Gertz with Popular Science. Doctor, can you describe what the treatment is generally, and if it's any different, the treatment being provided for this woman in the States?
The treatment for MERS coronavirus is non-specific. That means that we treat the fever, we treat the breathing difficulties with extra oxygen, but there's no specific medicine like an antiviral drug that targets the MERS coronavirus. And so that is what is being done here and what's being done around the world. We know that some people are doing some research into particular antiviral drugs, but there's no recommended specific treatment at this point other than the supportive or non-specific care. So I think we have time for the last question, Laurel.
Certainly. Our final question comes from Kyle Thomas. Your line is open, and please state your affiliation.
Hi, this is WTHR, the NBC station in Indianapolis. I know you can't give a specific facility, but I'm wondering if you could give us a city or maybe a region of Indiana where this patient is located.
Thank you for that repeated question. I can tell you that the patient's hospitalized in Indiana, and we do need clinicians around the country, not just in Indiana, to be on the alert in terms of travel-associated severe respiratory illness. We think an active investigation in Indiana is going to help us understand what, if any, risk there is beyond the individual patient. I really want to thank everybody for participating in the conference call. We've been talking about how interconnected the world is and how new diseases can be just a plane ride away. The first U.S. importation of MERS coronavirus represents a very low risk to the broad general public. Public health authorities in Indiana and surrounding areas are doing an active investigation to make sure that we can control this condition. We will update as additional information occurs. I do want to remind people that at CDC's website, cdc.gov, and at the Indiana Health Department website, we'll be posting a lot more information, and we'll be trying to keep that updated. We will hold additional press conferences if important changes occur. Thank you so much for participating, Tom.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Laurel, for participating. Those who have follow-up questions or need additional information can call the CDC press office at 404-639-3286. This concludes our call. Thank you very much.
That does conclude today's presentation. Thank you all for joining. You may now disconnect.